flaring torches and cautiously climbed down what seemed to be endless steps, and slithered along smooth rocky passages. Tunnels, I was told, has been made by volcanic action countless centuries before. Walls were strange diagrams and drawings of quite unfamiliar scenes. Lake, which I had been told stretched for miles and miles at the end of one passage, which grew wider and wider, until suddenly the roof disappeared to where the light of our torches would not reach. 100 yards more, and we stood at the edge of water such as I had never seen before. Yet almost invisible, more like a bottomless pit than a lake. A ripple disturbed the surface, not a sound broke the silence. Upon which we stood also was black. It glistened in the light of the torches, but a little to one side was a glitter on the wall. Towards it, and saw that in the rock there was a broad band of gold that was perhaps 15 to 20 feet long and reached from my neck to my knees. Great heat had once started to melt it from the rock, and it had cooled in lumps like golden candle grease. This lake goes to the river Tsangpo 40 miles away. Years and years ago, an adventurous party of monks made a raft of wood, and made paddles with which to propel it. The raft with torches, and pushed off from the shore. As they paddled, exploring, then they came to an even larger space where they could not see walls or roof. They paddled gently, not sure which way to go. I listened, picturing it vividly. Forward or which was backward, which extinguished their torches, leaving them in complete darkness, and they felt that their fragile craft was in the grip of the water demons. The insect that held the wood together and motion, little waves washed over the top and they became wet through. Speed increased, they felt that they were in the grip of the ruthless giant pulling them to their doom. They traveled, they had no means of telling. The darkness was solid black, such as never was upon the surface of the earth. Noise, and stunning blows and crushing pressures of the raft and forced under the water. Gulp air, and brighter and thrown, then they shot up into brilliant sunshine. Few of them managed to reach the shore more than half drowned, battered and bleeding. Of the other three there was no trace. For hours they lay half between death and life. Eventually one roused sufficiently to look about him. Billy collapsed again from the shock in meadows with grazing yaks. They thought that they had died, and this was a Tibetan heaven. Footsteps beside them, and a herdsman was looking down at them. He had seen the floating wreckage of the raft and had come to collect it for his own use. X managed to convince the man that they were monks, for their robes had been completely torn off, and he agreed to go to the Potala for litters. Since that day very little has been done to explore the lake, but it is known that there are islands a little way beyond the range of our torches. Has been explored, and what was found you will see later when you are initiated. I thought of it all and wished that I could have a raft and explore the lake. My guide had been watching my expression. Suddenly he laughed and said, "Yes, it would be fun to explore, but why waste our bodies when we can do the search in the astral? You can, Lobsang. Within a very few years you will be competent to explore this place with me, and add to the total knowledge we have of it. And now, study, boy, study." Our torches were flickering low and it seemed to me that we should soon be groping blindly in the darkness of the tunnels. How foolish of us not to bring spare lights. The Lama Manyodon upturned to the far wall and felt about. From some hidden niche he produced more torches and lit them from those now almost smoldering out. "Here, Lobsang, because it would be difficult to find one's way out in the dark. Be going." Up the sloping passages we toiled, pausing a while to regain our breath and to look at some of the drawings on the walls. To stand them, they appeared to be of giants, and there were machines so strange as to be utterly beyond my comprehension. But these drawings, and in the tunnels, I was looking forward to other visits here, there was some mystery about it all, and I never could hear of a mystery without trying to get to the bottom of it. The idea of spending years guessing at a solution when there was a chance of finding the answer, even if in so doing I was involved in considerable danger. A mumbling like an old man. More steps to go, and then it is daylight again. Point out the site where those monks of old came to the surface. When we did so, when we were on the roof, I wondered why we could not ride the 40 miles and actually visit the place. A thing that the telescope would not reveal. The outlet from the lake was apparently far below the water level and there was nothing to mark the spot, except a clump of trees which had been planted there by order of the previous incarnation of the Dalai Lama. Chapter 9 At the Wild Rose Fence. The next morning we made our leisurely preparations to return to Chakpori, For us, the Potala visit was quite a holiday. I rushed up to the roof to have a last look at the countryside through the telescope. Chakpurai, a small acolyte, was lying on his back reading, and occasionally tossing small pebbles onto the bald heads of monks in the courtyard. The glass, I could see the impish grin on his face as he ducked back out of sight of the puzzled monks below. It made me acutely uncomfortable to realize that the Dalai Lama had no doubt watched me do similar tricks. In future, I resolved, I would confine my efforts to the side of the buildings hidden from the Potala. Thanks to those lamas who had worked to make our short stay so pleasant. Nice to the Dalai Lama's personal steward. He had charge of the foods from India. Pleased him, because he made me a farewell gift which I was not slow to eat. Fortified, we started down the steps on our way back to the Iron Mountain. As we reached halfway, we became aware of shouts and calls, and passing monks pointed back behind us. We stopped, and a breathless monk rushed down and gasped out a message to the Lama Minyadondup. "Wait here for me, Lobsang, I shall not be very long." With that he turned and walked up the steps again. Idled around, admiring the view, and looking at my former home. I turned, and almost fell over backwards as I saw my father riding towards me. As I looked at him, he looked at me and his lower jaw dropped slightly as he recognized me. To my unutterable pain, he ignored me, and rode on. Retreating back and called father. Whatever, but rode stolidly on. I began to tremble, and I thought that I was going to disgrace myself in public, on the steps of the Potala of all places. Of control than I thought I possessed, I straightened my back and gazed out over Lhasa. After about half an hour, the Lama Minyadondup came riding down the steps and leading another horse. "Have to get to Sri in a hurry. One of the abbots there has had a bad accident." Guessed that it was my guide's equipment. Along the Linka road we galloped, past my former home, scattering pilgrims and beggars alike. It did not take us long to reach Sri Lamasri, where monks were waiting for us. We jumped off the horses, each carrying a case, and an abbot led us into where an old man lay on his back. The color of lead and the life force seemed to be flickering almost to a halt. Into it be dropped certain herbs. Was stirring this, the Lama examined the old man, who had a fractured skull as a result of falling. Bone was depressed and was exerting pressure on the brain. Liquid was cool enough. We mopped the old man's head with it, and my guide cleaned his hands with some of it, through the flesh, right through to the bone. Was little bleeding, the herbs prevented it. And was mopped on, and the flap of flesh was turned back and cleared away from the bone. Very gently the Lama Minyadondup examined the area and found where the skull bone had been crushed in and was hanging below the normal level of the skull. Disinfecting lotion before commencing, now he took from the bowl two silver rods, flattened at one end, and with serrations in the flat part. Beam care he inserted the thinnest edge into the widest fracture of the bone and held it rigidly while he took a firmer grip of the bone with the other rod. Gently, very gently, he prised up the flap of bone so that it was just above the normal level. He wedged it there with one rod and said, "Now pass the bowl, Lobsang." Held it so that he could take what he wanted, and he took a small spike of silver, just a minute triangular wedge. This he pressed into the crack between the normal skull bone and the fractured edge, which was now slightly above the level. Slowly he pressed the bone a little, moved slightly, and he pressed just a little more. The level was now normal. Knit together, and the silver, being an inert metal, will cause no trouble. More herbal lotion, and carefully put back the flap of flesh which had been left attached by one side. Oiled hair from a horse's tail. He stitched the flap, and covered the site of the operation with a herbal base tied in place with boiled cloth. Old abbot's life force had been growing stronger since the pressure was relieved from his brain. Up with cushions so that he was in a semi-sitting position, I cleaned the instruments in fresh boiling lotion, dried them on boiled cloth and packed everything carefully back into the two cases. And after, the old man's eyes flickered open, and he gave a weak smile as he saw the Lama Minyadondup bending over him. "If only you could save me, that is why I sent the mind message to the peak. My task is not yet finished and I am not ready to leave the body." And replied, "You will recover from this of discomfort, a headache or two, and when that has gone you can go about your work. You must have someone with you when you sleep, so that you do not lie flat. Your 4 days you will have no cause for worry." Onto the window and was looking out It was quite interesting to see conditions in another lamaserie. We shall make a team in this community. It is very different from ours. We left the old abbot in the care of the lama, and went out into the corridor. No cleaners at Chakpurai, nor did there seem to be any strict discipline. Uncared for, compared to ours, and even the incense was more bitter. Playing in the courtyards, at Chakpurai they would have been hard at work. Here and there an aged monk sat and twirled the wheels, but there was none of the order, cleanliness, and discipline which I had come to take as average. Would you like to stay here and have their easy life? I would not. I think there are a lot of savages here, I said. 7,000 of them. Silent majority and to disrepute. Maybe, I replied. They call this the rose fence. That is not what I would call it. Looked at me with a smile. I believe you would take on the job of bringing discipline to this lot single-handed. This discipline of any. Most of the others were very lax indeed, and when the monks there wanted to laze, well, they just lazed and nothing was said about it. Sarah, or the wild rose fence as it is really called, is 3 miles from the Potala and is one of the lamaseries known as the Three Seats. Three, with not less than 10,000 monks. Sarah comes next in importance with about 7,500 monks, while Ganden is the least important with a mere 6,000. Each is like a complete town with streets, colleges, temples, and all the usual buildings that go to make up a township. Streets were patrolled by the men of Kham. As the temple of medicine, it was then the seat of medical learning and was well represented in the council chamber of the government. At Chakpurai we were taught what I shall term judo. It is the nearest English word I can find. The Tibetan description of Sung Thrukyom Patu de Pola Lapo cannot be translated, nor can our technical word of Ameri. Judo is a very elementary form of our system. Not all lamaseries have this training, but we at Chakpurai were taught it to give us self-control, to enable us to deprive others of consciousness for medical purposes, and to enable us to travel safely in rougher parts of the country. As medical lamas we traveled extensively. Art, perhaps the best exponent of it in Tibet, and he had taught me all he knew, for his own satisfaction in doing a job well. Men and boys knew the elementary holds and throws, but I knew them. When I was 4 years of age, this art, we believe, should be used for self-defense and self-control, and not after the manner of a prize fighter. A man can afford to be gentle, while the weak and unsure brag and boast. Judo was used to deprive a person of consciousness when, for instance, setting broken bones, or extracting teeth pain with it, at no risk. Made unconscious before he is aware of its onset, and he can be restored to full consciousness hours or seconds later without ill effect. Enough, a person made unconscious while speaking will complete the sentence upon awakening. Our system, this and instant hypnotism were taught only to those who could pass most stringent tests of character. Ick blocks were imposed so that one should not abuse the powers conferred. In Tibet, a lamaserie is not merely a place where men of religious inclination live, but a self-contained town with all the usual facilities and amenities. A theatres in which to see religious and traditional plays. Musicians were ever ready to entertain us, and prove that in no other community were there such good players. Money were able to buy food, clothing, luxuries, and books in the shops. Those who desired to save, deposited their cash in the lamastic equivalent of a bank. Part of the world have their offenders against the rules arrested by monk police and taken off to a court where they were given a fair trial. Serve their sentence in the lamastic prison. Catered for all grades of mentality. Helped to make their way, but in all lamaseries other than Chakpurai, the slothful person was permitted to sleep or dream his life away. Our idea was, one cannot influence the life of another, so let him catch up in his next incarnation. The matters were different, and if one did not make progress, one was compelled to leave and seek sanctuary elsewhere where the discipline was not so strict. Monks were well treated. We had a hospital in the lamaseries and the indisposed were treated by monks who were trained in medicine and elementary surgery. Severe cases were treated by specialists, such as the Lama Minyadondup. Quite often since leaving Tibet I have had to laugh at the Western stories about Tibetans thinking that a man's heart is on the left side, and a woman's is on the right. I saw enough dead bodies cut open to know the truth. I have also been much amused about the filthy Tibetans, riddled with VD, as if such statements apparently have never been in those convenient places, in England and America, where the local citizenry are offered free and confidential treatment. Mark the position of the lips so that one cannot miss times they put stuff on their hair to make it shine, or to alter the color. Even pluck eyebrows and color nails, sure signs that Tibetan women are filthy and depraved. And to our Lamastic community, often there were visitors. They might be traders or monks. Accommodation in the Lamastic hotel. They also paid for such accommodation. Not all monks were celibate. Some thought that single blessedness did not induce the right frame of mind for contemplation. Those were able to join a special sect of red hat monks who were permitted to marry. In the minority, a celibate sect, were the ruling class in religious life. In married lamasaries, monks and nuns worked side by side in a well-ordered community, and the most times the atmosphere there was not so rough as in a purely male community. Works so that they could print their own books on paper. Not a healthy occupation, because one form of tree bark used in paper manufacture was highly poisonous. While this prevented any insect from attacking Tibetan paper, it also had a bad effect on the monks. And those who worked at this trade complained of severe headaches and worse metal type. All our pages were drawn on wood of suitable character, and then everything except the drawn outlines was pared away, leaving the parts to be printed standing high above the rest of the board. Some of these boards were 3 feet wide by 18 inches deep, and the detail would be quite intricate. A board containing the slightest mistake was used, and pages are not like the pages of this book, which are longer than they are wide. We used wide and short pages, and they were always unbound. The various loose sheets were kept between carved wooden covers. In printing, the carved board of page contents was laid flat in roller over the whole surface, making sure of even distribution. Another monk took up a sheet of paper and quickly spread it on the board, while a third monk followed with a heavy roller to press the paper well down. Monk lifted off the printed page and passed it to an apprentice, who put it to one side. The sheets, these were never used for the book, but were kept for the apprentices to practice upon. Boards about 6 feet high and about 4 feet wide, these had carvings of the human figure and the various organs. From them were made wall charts, which we had to color. Charts on which we erected horoscopes were about 2 feet square. Maps of the heavens at the time of a person's conception and birth. On the map blanks we inserted the date which we found in the carefully prepared mathematical tables which we published. After looking over the rose fence Lamasri and, in my case, comparing it unfavorably with ours, we returned to the room to see the old abbot again. Our absence he had improved very greatly and was now able to take much greater interest in things around him. In particular, he was able to pay attention to the Lama Minya Dondup, to whom he seemed very attached. Priest in charge as we leave. 3 little leather bags were taken from his case and handed over. Which meant life, instead of death, to an aged man. In the entrance courtyard we found a monk holding 2 deplorably frisky ponies. They had been fed and rested and were now very ready to gallop. Fortunately for me, the Lama Minya Dondup was quite content for us to amble along. 700 yards from the nearest part of the Linka Road, just to pass my old home, my guide evidently caught my thoughts, for he said, "We will cross the road to the street of shops. Tomorrow is a new day which we have not yet seen." I was fascinated to look at the shops of the Chinese traders and to listen to their high shrill voices as they bickered and chaffered at the prices. Just opposite their side of the street was a courtyard, symbolizing immortality of the ego, and behind that loomed a gleaming temple to which the monks of nearby Shed Gompa were streaming. In the lanes of cluttered houses which clustered as if for protection in the shadow of the Jokang, last time I was here I was a free man, not training to be a monk. Wish it was all a dream and I could wake up. Down the road we ambled, and turned right to the road which led over the turquoise bridge. "So you still do not want to be a monk, you know. At the end of this week the annual party are going to the hills to gather herbs. This time I do not want you to go. Instead, study with me so that you can take the examination for trapper when you are 12. Take you on a special expedition to the highlands to obtain some very rare herbs." Reached the end of the village of Sho and were approaching the Pagokling, the western gate of the valley of Lhasa. Against the wall, Ho, do not cure me of miles or my living is gone. My guide looked sad as we rode through the court and forming the gate necessary, and in China where I went with the precious one, people talked of the beggars of Lhasa, not realizing that some of them were rich. Fulfillment of the prophecy of the year of the Iron Tiger, 1950, communists invade Tibet, the beggars will be put to work and I will not be here to see it. Lobsang lands. For me, a return to the heavenly fields. Just to think that my beloved Lama would leave me, leave this life, not then did I realize that life on earth was but an illusion, a testing place, a school. Behavior to those beset by adversity was beyond me. Tis not. Left we turned into the Lingka Road, past the Kundu Ling, and left again to our own road leading up to the Iron Mountain. I never tired of looking at the colored rock carving which made up one side of our mountain. It was covered with carvings and paintings of deities. Advanced and we had no more time to spare. We rode up. I thought of the herb gatherers. Every year a party from the Chakporai went to the hills to gather herbs, dried them, and packed them into airtight bags. Was one of the great storehouses of nature's remedies. To the highlands where there were things too strange to discuss. Yes, I decided, I could well forego a visit to the hills this year, and I would study hard so that I should be fit to accompany the expedition to the highlands when the Lama Minyadon up thought fit. Pass the examination at the first attempt, but I knew that I should have to study hard. I knew that the prediction meant if I studied hard enough, my mental stage was at least equivalent to an 18-year-old. As always I had mixed with people much older than I, and I had to fend for myself and beliefs. It may be of some interest to give here some details of our way of lifeism, but there is no word which can be transliterated as the religion, and to those of our faith, as insiders, are termed outsiders. Word, already known in the West, Islamism. It departs from Buddhism in that ours is a religion of hope and a belief in the future. Buddhism, to us, seems negative, a religion of despair. Certainly do not think that an all-seeing father is watching and guarding everyone, everywhere. Have passed erudite comment on our religion condemned us because they were blinded by their own faith, and could see no other point of view. Some have even called us satanic because our ways are alien to them. On hearsay or on the writings of others, possibly a very few have studied our beliefs for a few days and have then felt competent to know all, to write books on the subject, and to interpret and make known that which it takes our cleverest sages a lifetime to discover. Imagine the teachings of a Buddhist or Hindu who had flipped the pages of the Christian Bible for an hour or two and then tried to explain all the subtler points of Christianity. None of these writers on Lamaism has lived as a monk in a Lamasery from early boyhood and studied the sacred books. These books are secret, secret because they are not available to those who want quick, effortless and cheap salvation. Solace of some ritual, some form of self-hypnosis, can have it if it will help them. Childish self-deception. To some it may be very comforting to think that sin after sin can be committed and then, when the conscience prods too much, a gift of some kind to the nearest temple will so overwhelm the gods with gratitude that forgiveness will be immediate, all-embracing, and certain, and will enable one to indulge in a fresh set of sins. A supreme being. It matter what we call him. God is a fact. Those who have studied the true teachings of Buddha never pray for mercy or for favors, but only that they may receive justice from man. Him being, as the essence of justice, cannot show mercy to one and not to another, because to do so would be a denial of justice. Pray for mercy or for favors, promising gold or incense if the prayer is answered, is to imply that salvation is available to the highest bidder. That God is short of money and can be bought thee to man, but very rarely does. The Supreme Being can show only justice for mortal souls. Manipadmiham is often translated literally as hail to the jewel of the lotus. Who have gone a little further know that the true meaning is hail to man's over self. One doffs one's clothes at the end of day, so does the soul doff the body when the latter sleeps. Of clothes is discarded when worn out, so does the soul discard the body when the latter is worn or torn. Another plane of existence. Man, or the spirit of man, is eternal. The body is but the temporary garment that clothes the spirit, to be chosen according to the task in hand upon earth. Outward appearance does not matter. Within does. A great prophet may come in the guise of a pauper, How better can one judge of man's charity to man! Exclamation mark. Why one who has sinned in a past life when there is not poverty to drive him on? The wheel of life is what we call the act of being born, living on some world, dying, going back to the spirit state, and in time being reborn in different circumstances and conditions. For much in a life, it does not necessarily mean that he was evil in a past life. It may be the best and quickest way of learning certain things. Experience is a better teacher than hearsay. Be reborn to live out the years cut short in the past life, but it does not follow that all who die young, or as babies, were suicides. If applies to all, beggars and kings, men and women, colored people and white. But a symbol, of course, but one which makes matters clear to those who have no time to make a long study of the subject. Explain Tibetan belief in a paragraph or two. The Kanya, or Tibetan scriptures, consist of over 100 books on the subject, and even then it is not fully dealt with. Hidden within remote lamasseries which are seen by initiates alone. For centuries peoples of the East have known of the various occult forces and laws, and that these were natural. Prove such forces on the grounds that as they could not be weighed or tested with acids, they could not exist. Eastern scientists and researchers have striven to increase their command over these laws of nature. Mechanics of clairvoyance, for example, did not interest us. The results of clairvoyance did. They are like the born blind who say that sight is impossible because they have not experienced it, because they cannot understand how an object some distance away can be seen when there is clearly no contact between it and the eyes. The outlines which surround the body, and by the intensity of those colors those experienced in the art can deduce a person's health, integrity, and general state of evolution. Radiation of the inner life force, the ego, or soul head, is a halo, or nimbus, which also is part of the force. Death, the light fades as the ego leaves the body on its journey to the next stage of existence. It becomes a ghost. It's a little, perhaps dazed by the sudden shock of being free of the body. What is happening? That is why lamas attend the dying, that they may be informed of the stages through which they will pass. May be earthbound by desires of the flesh. It's the duty of the priests to break these ties. Devils, we had a service for guiding the ghosts. Has no terror for Tibetans. But we believe that one can have an easier passage from this life to the next if certain precautions are taken. Clearly defined paths, and to think along certain lines. Service would be conducted in a temple with about 300 monks present. In the center of the temple would be a group of perhaps 5 telepathic lamas sitting in a circle, face to face, led by an abbot, chanted. The lamas would try to maintain telepathic contact with distressed souls. No translation from the Tibetan prayers can do full justice to them, but this is an attempt. Hear the voices of our souls, all you who wander unguided in the borderlands and worlds apart. Where can their faces be seen and their voices heard? Stick of incense is lit to summon a wandering ghost that he may be guided. Who wanders is the world of illusion. Life is but a dream. All that are born must die leads to eternal life. The third stick of incense is lit to summon a wandering ghost that he may be guided. Hear the voices of our souls, all you of great power. You who have been enthroned with mountains and rivers under your rule. Rains have lasted but a moment, and the complaints of your peoples have never ceased. Leaves of the trees are swayed by the sighs of the oppressed. Summon the ghosts of kings and dictators that they may be guided. You warriors who have invaded, wounded and killed, are your armies now. Grow over the battlefields. Fifth stick of incense is lit to summon lonely ghosts of generals and lords for guidance. Scholars, you who have worked at painting and writing, burn down your ink slabs. Nothing of you is remembered, and your souls must continue on. Sixth stick of incense is lit to summon the ghosts of artists and scholars for guidance. To full virgins and ladies of high degree whose youth could be compared to a fresh spring morning. Embrace of lovers comes the breaking of hearts. Autumn, then the winter, comes, trees and flowers fade, as do beauty, and become but skeletons. High degree that they may be guided away from the ties of the world. And thieves and those who have committed crimes against others and who cannot now obtain rest. Your soul wanders friendless in the world, and you have not justice within you. Summon all those ghosts who have sinned and who now wander alone, prostitutes, women of the night, and all those that have been sinned against and who now wander alone in ghostly realms. The ninth stick of incense is lit to summon them for guidance that they may be freed from the bonds of the world. In the incense-laden dusk of the temple, the flickering butter lamps would cause living shadows to dance behind the golden images. The concentration of the telepathic monks as they strove to maintain contact with those who had passed from the world, yet were still bound to it,